Hey everybody, it's Chastity and Chris back with another
podcast.
Yeah, discussion. This time we're going to talk about epilepsy. There was another person on the list a long time ago that talked about sleep apnea. And, you know, so since we're talking about conditions, I know his was a little different because he had the CPAP machine to demonstrate. But I just figured we'd talk about the epilepsy and safety information and what it's like to deal with epilepsy, what it's like as a person to live with a partner that has epilepsy. And while I'm doing that, Chris is going to get me a soda. Chris?
Yeah?
Oh.
I'm getting your soda right now.
Hurry up and get it so you can come back and contribute. Because he's the one that has epilepsy, so. I guess, first of all, I'd like to start off talking about, for me, the most important thing when we started, when we got together in 2000 was that he educate me and discuss his epilepsy with me in detail, because everybody's seizures are different. You know, there's different kinds of seizures, there's different medicines for your seizures, there's different ways people like to be, you know, different treatments that people like when they have seizures. Some people may want you to do one thing, and some may want you to do another. Some may not want you to call an ambulance, others might want you to. You know, different things like that. And so it's, you know, at the time, Chris wasn't very comfortable with his epilepsy because his family made him feel that way. And it was kind of strange because his mom never had a problem with his blindness, but she had a really big problem with his epilepsy. I don't really want to say that she had a problem with it, but it seemed to me, the way that he acted when I first started dating, that he said that his family, you know, told him not to talk about it and things like that. So, I guess I jumped the gun and I said she had a problem, but, you know, it was like when we first started dating, I asked him about his epilepsy, and he's like, I don't want to talk about it, just go research it yourself. And I thought, okay, well, you know, one of the things, if we're going to date, is that you have to talk about it, at least, you know, to educate me enough on it. Not that it has to come up in daily conversation, you know, but I need to at least be educated on what to do. And I remember the first time I remember the very first time that he had a seizure was, like, in April. I don't think it was when he came to see me for Easter. I think it was the month after. But I can't remember for sure. I know it wasn't the first couple of times, but I do remember, for the first 3 years that we were together, his seizures were not very controlled. I mean, they were, he wasn't doing it daily, but it was definitely too frequent. And he had gone through a number of neurologists, and I just remember he said he hadn't slept very well, and I remember he was in the bathroom for a really long time, and I thought, wow, you know, and I called his name a few times, and he didn't answer, and then he had the fan on in the bathroom, so I couldn't hear anything, and I opened the door, and I found him laying on the floor shaking, and I didn't know what happened, and his breathing was real labored, and you know, I didn't know what to do, and I was really freaked out, and I like got as far away from him as I could, because I didn't know what to do, and I just, like, stood there while he had a seizure. I didn't know what else to do. I was even too panicked and, like, not in the right frame of mind to call 911, because I just didn't think about it. I was just so shocked from seeing it.
What kind of soda is that?
Pepsi.
Oh, okay. So we got through that. You know, luckily he only had one that time. Because if he had two, I would have had to call 911, and I wouldn't have known that. And at the time, I wouldn't have known how to detect, like, when he goes from one to another. Because that was my first time seeing him have a seizure. And I got freaked out, and I told him we had to call his parents and talk to his family about what to do, too, because I didn't know what to do, and I was just so freaked out, and I thought I better call his family, because, you know, when he woke up out of the seizure, maybe he wasn't in the right frame of mind to tell me what to do. I just kind of figured, oh, I don't know what to do here. So that was the first time. And then he had him, like, every couple months for a while. And for the longest time when he moved here, he didn't have a neurologist. How many did you go through up in Minnesota? Like, two? Three?
I think it was one or two.
Yeah. I remember at least your mom mentioning two. And he was on different medicines. I mean, he was, like, the doctors were having him try so many different medicines, and when we first got together, the medicine he was on was Tegretol, and that obviously didn't seem to control his seizures very well, either the dose or the kind of medicine. I didn't know, but then he went and seen a neurologist up here, a man who really didn't have his stuff together and didn't really need to be a neurologist, because Chris was having so many seizures with that guy, being his neurologist, and, you know, the guy was just switching medicines, just switching totally, you know, cold turkey on him, and you're not supposed to do that, you know, if you gotta be weaned on and off of a medicine, you know, you're not supposed to just stop it from one day to the next, you know, when you're an epileptic, that really can trigger a seizure very quickly. And this guy was just a quack doctor, and he had no business even being a neurologist, I don't think, and it just sounded like, when I would go with Chris to all of his appointments, it sounded like he just didn't want to deal with it, and, you know, he wanted to give him the best medicine, you know, that would just make him come in less, you know, less frequently. And what really did it for me, the first time, you know, he had a lot of seizures throughout 2001, and then 2002 came, and he went into ICU on May 12th of 2002 because he had 5 seizures and his heart stopped twice that day. And, well, he had 2 at home, and then I called the ambulance because he always told me to call 911 after the second seizure. And I called the ambulance, and fortunately we got to the hospital because, like, 2 minutes after we got there, there were, like, 8 nurses surrounding him and saying that his heart had stopped. And it was just a weird thing because, you know, if I had waited even a couple more minutes, who knows what would have happened. He needed oxygen throughout the ambulance ride, and it was, you know, he had 2 at home, and as I said, you know, he had, like, 4 or 5 more at the hospital, so he had, like, 5 or 6 seizures that day, and he was in ICU. They told his parents to catch the next flight in because they thought he was going to die. And then the doctor nonchalantly just came into the hospital room and said, oh, okay, well, you know, we'll have to just switch medicines, we'll work on it. And I understand the doctor not being hysterical, you know, because you don't want to get the patient hysterical, but it just seemed like he really didn't care. He hurried in and out like it was a 5-minute exam and didn't even bother to get the important information that I think he really needed to get him on the right medicine or to make a diagnosis of anything. So because of that, Chris spent from Sunday, May 12th to Tuesday, May 14th or Wednesday, May 15th in the hospital. He had several heart tests done. It was my finals week of my freshman year of college. No, wait. 2000 to 2000. No, it was my sophomore year of college. It was my finals week of my sophomore year of college. And I got D's on all my finals because they were essays and I couldn't finish them up because he was in the ICU. I could have finished them up. Not to say that I couldn't have, but it's not an ample time to sit there and calmly sit at your computer and type out an essay while your significant other is in the hospital dying, about to die any minute, you know, and so I turned in very sloppy work, I remember, for my finals, which was really uncharacteristic of me, because I usually do A work, but, you know, during that type of crisis, you don't think about stuff like that, and so I turned in really sloppy work. Luckily, I still got a C in the class, because I explained the situation to my professor. I got an F on the essay that I had to write for the final, but I still got a C in the class, which I would have probably gotten anyway, because she was boring. But anyway, that was beside the point. So as a result of this neurologist, he spent from Sunday to either Tuesday or Wednesday in the hospital. I couldn't remember. And the whole time, the nurses there were really bad. I can't say the doctors were bad because they saved his life, you know, because they were good. So, but the nurses just, they didn't feed him on time. He was too weak to feed himself. He couldn't barely sit up. And so I had to feed him. I had to stay at the hospital and make sure that he didn't want anything in, you know, to where he wouldn't have to, they wanted him to have devices in, you know, where he wouldn't have to get out of bed to use the restroom, and he didn't feel comfortable with that, because he was alert enough to understand, and, you know, he didn't feel comfortable just going to the bathroom in bed, and so I had to be there to, you know, walk him to the bathroom, and I basically did everything. I had to clean up after him in the restroom, and I had to feed him breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And when he got home, he wanted to come home so fast. Like, he wanted to come home the next day. And, oh, wow. It was just crazy. But even on Wednesday, he was just so weak that I had to bathe him and I had to do everything. I had to dress him. And you know, we really didn't know that he was still having seizure problems. And so that Saturday of that same week, just 6 days after that ICU incident, he was back in the hospital in ICU again, just 6 days later. And the doctor just didn't seem like it was a very big deal, you know. It was just like, oh, well, you know, here we are again. Okay, let's put you on a higher dose, or, you know, switch the medicines. And that was still in May of 2002, and then I think he didn't have any during the summer, finally. But I was just really scared, because I thought, wow, you know. And I think that brought us a lot closer, you know. He's not helpless by any means, you know, when he's not having seizures. You know, he does everything on his own. I don't do that on a regular basis, but, you know, when you're when something happens like that and you're too weak to do it, I was glad to be there for him to do it. But in December of 2002, we were still seeing that same doctor. We should have had enough sense to switch, but we were in the process of looking for a new neurologist, so we stayed with him. And December of 2002 was my last straw, because Chris had been calling since the beginning of the month saying, my medicine's about to run out, can you please call in a refill? Just over and over and over, day after day after day after day, from the beginning of December till New Year's Eve, when Chris finally took his last pill. And I had enough. I called the doctor's exchange, like 3 or 4 times, and finally the doctor called back, and I guess he was at home, and I interrupted. I think it was the day before New Year's Eve. I think it was December 30th, 2002. And I apparently interrupted his parties, his holiday festivities or whatever, because he's like, I'm busy. And, you know, I thought to myself, well, if you had called in his prescriptions about 2 weeks earlier, there wouldn't have been a need for this. And so he never called in a prescription for Chris. And on January 1st, Chris took his last pill December 31st. And on January 1st, he went into ICU because Chris's seizures are so severe that if he even misses one pill of a dose, he goes into ICU. For instance, if he takes a pill at, say, 10 o'clock at night, and his next pill's due at 8 in the morning, if he misses the 8 in the morning dose, he's in ICU by 12 noon. Or, you know, if he's even missed it 4 or 5 hours, he's in ICU. It's really bad. And so he was in ICU the next day, and I called the exchange again, and I said, you know, look, we've been patient enough. You know, I said, I called the doctor 2 days ago. The doctor still hasn't called anything in. I said, we need his medicine now. And the nurse said, oh, we don't call in prescriptions on holidays. And that's when I got really, really angry, and I said, I hope somebody in your family really has a disaster, and the doctors refuse to call prescriptions in for them on holidays. And I said, you're gonna have a bleeping lawsuit on your bleeping hands, and you just wait until the bleeping media finds out about this bleeping situation and how you bleeping people conduct your bleeping business. And I forgot what I said, but I was cussing him out while the ambulance was wheeling Chris out the door to go back into ICU. And I was just screaming to them up and down. And then the doctor calls about 3 days later, and his main concern was how I treated his staff. He wasn't concerned about the fact that he was 3 weeks late in calling in Chris's medicine, causing him to go into ICU. He was more concerned about the fact that I didn't treat his staff professionally. I cussed them out, and, you know, I called them a bunch of names, and I didn't treat them very professionally. And so we switched neurologists for the much better person, and he has never had a seizure since January 1st, 2003. So he's been safe since then. He's gone through a number of medications. He's gone through Tegretol. What others did you go through? What others did that weirdo have you on? He went through Tegretol, Lexapro, Celexa. What else were you on?
I think those were the main three.
Yeah, he was just on a bunch, just switching month by month.
Lexapro I didn't really like.
I forgot the side effects of each of them. I don't remember.
I don't remember the side effects of them. I know with the Tegretol, that's the medicine that the neurologist in Minnesota, my last one, gave me, and that never worked, obviously, like Chas was just stating. That never worked. And same thing with the other two that this other guy gave me, the other neurologist, that never worked either. And I was getting nervous myself, too, because of the fact that...
you were in the hospital so much.
Yeah, and I wouldn't call it... I mean, you said ICU in January, and was that of 2003? Was that just a regular visit, or was
it... No, it was ICU. They didn't admit you to ICU.
Oh, they did?
Uh-huh. Even though he was only there that day for the afternoon, but they admitted him to the ICU emergency unit, but he was only there for the afternoon because he wasn't unconscious. Like the May 12th, 2002 episode, he wasn't unconscious.
Well, actually, the last thing I remember, and I don't want to dive into this because it's probably going to bore a lot of you to death about this type of thing, but if any of you want to know more about it, email me and I'll be glad to share some of this stuff. But
the last thing I remember is what?
The last thing I remember, and maybe you can fill in the blanks, the last thing I remember is in the hospital, me saying, or the nurse was talking to you. The nurse was saying...
Was that in May 2002?
Yeah. Uh-huh. The nurse was talking to you, and you were saying something like, I like to stay with him. I stayed with him in the past. And the nurse is like, well, we need to work on him. Can you wait out in the waiting room or something? And I think I was saying I'd like her to stay with
me. The very last thing you said before you passed out, like 2 seconds later, is I'm feeling queasy. That was the very last thing you said. Mm. And then you were gone. Your heart had stopped. Like 2 seconds later, your heart stopped for like 10 seconds, and then it started back on its own. And then in 2003, that January 1st, I said, I've kind of started to notice the signs of when he's going to have a seizure, and you kind of notice that when you live with somebody for so long. You know, now I can kind of tell. There have been like 3 or 4 more episodes where he's come close, because there's times when his body gets, you know, used to the level of medicine that he's on, and when it comes time to increase the level because his body's like, you know, used to it, and it's not going to work on his body anymore because it's used to that level now. And so there have been a few more episodes when he's almost had some, but luckily I've made him go to the hospital. He got blood work done. They could tell his levels were low, and then his neurologist made a recommendation to up the medicine dosage. She called it in, and it worked, you know, there it was from there. But a lot of times I notice that he'll feel really, really, really exhausted and barely be able to do anything before a seizure comes on, and then I'll just make him go to the hospital. And make is the operative word there, because he doesn't like to go on his own, so...
Another thing is I'm starting to pay more attention to it now. Before one comes on, sometimes I get this really bad headache. This really pounding bad headache. It's like really terrible. I mean, it's not your average headache. It's like, okay, I got a headache, no biggie.
And when he says he's got a headache now, I automatically assume, oh, a seizure's coming on. And a lot of times, luckily, it doesn't. But I just get scared that one might be coming on. Or if he's more tired than usual, I get scared that one might be coming on. And if he's in the restroom a long amount of time, I get scared, because most of the episodes happened in the restroom. In fact, the May 12th episode happened, I wasn't even awake, and I heard a loud thud in the living room, but I fell back to sleep. And then my guide dog whined and woke me up, and then I went and I saw that he was shaking in front of the thermostat in the living room, and I just saw that he was on the ground. And then in January, when that happened with the doctor not calling in his medicine, we were all watching a movie, and, you know, time just flies when you're watching a movie if you're into it, and we had two other friends over at the time, and one of my friends said, Chris has been in the bathroom for like 30 minutes now, and I just didn't even notice, you know, I thought maybe he had gone to take a shower, I didn't know what happened, and so she's like, yeah, you know, Chris has been in the bathroom for over 30 minutes, and luckily she was really attentive to it, and I said, go by the door. I said, do you hear anything? And she goes, yeah. She goes, I hear a lot of moving around in there and breathing heavy. And so I opened the door, and sure enough, he was on the floor again having a seizure. And that's how I knew at that time, too. And I think that's a sign to pay attention to. Since he and I are together, you know, in a relationship, I would tell him to just leave the restroom door open if there's nobody else home, you know, and don't worry about anything, you know, because... You know, I think it's more important for me to know those types of things than for him to shut the bathroom door and try not, you know, to do the courteous thing or whatever. You know, I don't care if he leaves it open if we're the only two home, you know, if we don't have any company over. But other than that, if we have company over and he's got to shut the door, or if we're out in a public restaurant or facility and he's got to go to the bathroom, I have somebody check on him every 5 or 6 minutes, you know, because it's just... Most of his episodes have happened in the bathroom, and so that's when I kind of start to worry, you know, that maybe something's happened. And so now, after the January episode, I was on Christmas vacation when that happened. And so I was just talking to a bunch of people about it, and this lady recommended a neurologist that her mom had gone to, and, you know, I decided to give it a try. And in the meantime, I just spent hours and hours and hours, day after day after day, on the internet, researching seizure drugs, seizure medicines. And I called all these epilepsy foundations. I called every company that had epilepsy in the title or had seizure in the title. I called them, and I was like desperate to find something, because I was just freaked out about all these ICUs and close death calls, and, you know, I was just really scared because I was only like 20 and 21 years old at the time, and it was just it was just a lot for me to deal with, you know. And so I finally, after a lot of research and online, going after website, calling place after place after place, I read about all these different drugs that were available. And I just, basically what I did is I kind of matched him up with, like, the symptoms he was having, and read about what the drugs did, and, like, what symptoms they prevented, and, like, what, you know, this is the drug you take for this symptom, or whatever. And I wrote down, like, three or four of them that stood out in my mind. And then when he got a new neurologist, I said, is it possible to let him try these three, I think at the time it was four. Is it possible to let him try these four medications? And she said, oh, sure, that's fine. Well, I think I had recommended two, and he was already on two. And so I said, is it possible for him to try a combination of carbitrol and valproic acid? Well, valproic acid that's Depakote? Or is it carbitrol? One of them is the generic brand of Depakote.
I think it's Valproic.
I think so. Yeah, because this lady said her mom was on Depakote, and she had been seizure-free for years, and so I thought, well, maybe he should be on Depakote, you know, and the insurance would only pay for the generic brand of it. So, you know, I recommended these medicines, and, you know, luckily they've been the ones that have worked, you know, and that's a weird thing. I'm not even a doctor, and I'm, you know, researching stuff, and it's happened to work, knock on wood, you know, and then I started calling different companies, because Chris didn't really want to learn much about it at the time, and I just started calling different companies and asking about all kinds of different medicines, and I found out about another medicine. Luckily, we haven't had to use it yet, but I found out about another one. I can't remember the name of it right now. Do you remember the name of that one that you insert?
No.
Okay, well, there's another one that you insert. You insert it when the person's having a seizure. It's not an injectable, so you may know what I'm talking about.
And we don't need to go.
Yeah.
We don't need to go anything. I don't want anyone to stop listening to this right now. We're not going to go any further.
All I need to say is that you insert it and it's not a needle, so you can figure out the rest by yourself where to insert. But anyway, but I figured, you know, I found out about this other one that while the person is having a seizure, you can give them this medication, and it will stop their seizure. I haven't ever tried it, so I'm really curious how it works, but I'm, you know, maybe I'll never have to try it. That'll be even better. So, what else do you want to, close by saying some stuff about seizures yourself, or what?
Well, why don't you and I discuss, some basic, safety tips.
Okay, well, you do it, because I don't know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. Stuff that you do when you're having a seizure.
Well, why don't you talk about it? You haven't said much the whole time.
Oh, well, I'm giving you your second podcast. No, just kidding.
You're going to touch the wrong button on the computer.
I know. Well, that's because you're sitting in the chair, and I'm, like, leaning over, and it's hurting my back. Anyway. Basically, the main thing to remember is when someone is having a seizure, do not move them.
Or stick your hand in their mouth.
My dad did that.
Yeah, because it's a myth. It's a complete myth that people swallow their tongue during a seizure, or that something can happen to their tongue. Don't put your hand in their mouth. Don't put any objects in their mouth, because that could really harm them. It's a total myth about people swallowing their tongues.
Yeah, my dad stuck his finger in my mouth, and I bit it.
And I didn't even remember doing it until he told me. And I said, what do you got this Band-Aid on your finger for? And he said, well, when you were in a seizure, you bit my finger. And I'm like, oh, no.
This must have been, like, when you're in your teens, huh?
Yeah. I said, I'm sorry.
Another thing that his neurologist told me is that when they're having a seizure, it's good to it's good to put them on the right side. It's good to put them on the right side. There's two, like, phases of a seizure. There's, like, the heavy breathing where their body's going into convulsions and it's just shaking. And during that period, they should be laid on the right side. And then there will be the period where they stop shaking. Their body stops shaking. It feels real heavy, like they've passed out, you know, like, basically like you're dragging somebody, you know, and it's just dead weight, you know. You're dragging someone if they're passed out or something, and it just feels like their body is really heavy. But they're breathing really heavy, like just taking deep breaths in and out. And during that period, they should be laid on their back. Is there anything else? I forgot. Is there? And the other thing is not to panic, because his doctor said that they can still definitely hear you.
Oh yeah, that's definitely true. I may not be able to talk, but
they can still understand. And they may not be able to totally understand what's going on, but they can. It's not like they're in a coma or, you know, even people in vegetative states, you know, sometimes they say that they can hear, but it's not like they're totally unconscious and unaware of their surroundings or not alert.
One thing also to remember is
when you come out of one, you feel very disoriented. That's
what's happened to me. I've come out of them several times. I've been very confused.
And the person will probably have to stay in bed the whole day if they don't have to go to the hospital. If it's only one, well, I don't want to say this because it's not the rule of thumb for everybody and people have their own preferences, but in Chris's case, if it's only one, he does not want me to call the 911. He just wants to have it and then lay in bed the rest of the day. But if it's two or more, then you really need to call an ambulance. And, you know, they do normally lay around for a day or so when it happens.
One thing to remember is when the person comes out of it, don't ask them so many questions because...
Yeah.
You're going to be very confused, and it may bring on more stress because you're trying to... Your brain is just all screwed up because you're trying to remember stuff.
Stress is a big factor in seizures.
Yeah, it is.
And the nurse made that mistake. Like, she totally wouldn't listen to me when I said don't ask questions, and she was like, what date is it? What time is it? What... It was like not the nurse, but the ambulance lady that came out one time. She was like, what's the date today? Where are you? What time is it? What's my name? And she was having me ask my name, you know, tell him to say your name, and, you know, all kinds of different, she was just asking question after question, and he didn't know the answers, because he was just waking up out of it, and don't try to give him water or food, because another friend of mine that was over there that last time he had a seizure was asking, Chris, are you thirsty? Do you want me to get you a drink of water? And I said, that's not a good idea.
because I think what happened... I said, sure, why not? And then my friend goes, you're going to get sick if you do. And
who said that? The lady or the man? Or?
My friend, one of my other friends a long time ago, this similar situation happened. I was at a training center in Minnesota.
Oh, that's right, okay.
And I had a seizure there. And he was like, you know, you want a drink of water? And I said, sure. And I think I just came out of it, one of them. And he's like, well, I don't think that's a good idea. You just came out of one, and you might get sick. If you put water down your throat, I don't think that's a good idea. I said, but I'm thirsty. You know, can I have a drink of water? And keep in mind, I just came out of one. I didn't even know what I was doing. And I said, just give me a drink of water, will you? And he's like, okay. So he gave me a drink of water, but... Guess what happened?
You threw it up?
Yep.
Ew, I didn't know that. But a lot of people who have seizures can't drive because they're, you know, if they're not controlled. But other people who are controlled have breakthrough seizures years later. And there's certain situations, you know, if they're not controlled, you either need to find a new neurologist or see what other medicines are out there. Because that's how Chris's were first. But, you know, there's got to be a way to control all of these somehow. And, you know, it's just... Some people just think, you know, when their neurologists say they can't be controlled, some people just live with it and say, oh, well, you know, they can't be controlled, and in many cases, it's just an uneducated neurologist or the wrong medication that's doing it. And there's one man that we know from a list that Chris is on, an epilepsy-related list that Chris is on, that has seizures so often that he can't even go out of his house on his own because people keep finding him on the side of the road, laying on the side of the road, having seizures. And so obviously, you know, he needs to get that under control and find the right medication and the right neurologist to deal with it.
But anyway, if you have any questions, of course, or you want to chat, like I said, I always end this. I should put this in as at the end of my podcast, we should always, like, just insert this little message at the end. If you want to contact us, you can email me. My address is chrischass0713@charter.net. That's chrischass0713@charter.net. And if you have any questions about epilepsy or whatever, I'll be glad to help you out, answer questions, talk more about my experiences over the past few years. And if you have any questions for Chastity, as far as, you know, what is it like? You know, we basically told you what it was like, but if you have any more questions, just go ahead and pass them on. We'll be glad to help you out. Thanks for listening, and again, we'll talk to you guys later.